Edutainment Learning is powered by Academica Virtual Education and Collegia TV. For more information, visit www.edutainmentlearning.com.
All right, Dan Holdridge, and as far as what happened 24 years ago, it basically, I was working inside the Pentagon as a in construction. I was in charge of installing data networking equipment. It's hard to believe it's 24 years ago. When I'm thinking about it, it's bringing myself back there. It seems like it was just yesterday. And it, on September 11th, 2001, it was a beautiful morning. It was an awesome job that I was working in. And as I was going to work that morning, everything seemed normal. It was a beautiful day, and things just seemed like any other day prior to 9/11. And so following a conference call I had that morning, it was probably about 8:30. The woman who I was speaking with called me back and said, "Hey, did you hear about New York?" And I was like, "No." And I was, "What happened in New York?" And so she had told me that a plane had hit one of the World Trade Centers. And so I said, "Oh, geez, what a horrible accident, right?" You know, I mean, prior to 9/11, there was no thought of a plane actually hitting a building, let alone being a form of a missile of sorts to hurt other people. So as I was talking to her, I had mentioned how I was familiar with the New York City and the trade centers. I grew up not too far in Connecticut from where they were. And so we were just reflecting what a horrible accident that was. And then she said, "You'll never guess what." And I'm like, "What's that?" And she said, "A second plane hit the other trade center." And I'm like, "Wait a minute. One's an accident. Two, we must be at war." And so yeah, that changed everything. And so after I ended up, talking with her just shortly thereafter, I hung up and I did what a lot of people did. I called home. I spoke to my dad from the Pentagon I'm calling from. And I said, "Hey, Dad, heads up, it looks like our nation might be at war." And as I said that, I reflected. I'm thinking, oh, man, I'm in the defense capital of the world. This is probably not the best spot to be in. And so I'm sure a lot of you have done this in the past. When you're talking to somebody, you're trying to convince somebody of something, and then you're actually trying to convince yourself as you're doing it. I told my dad I was going to be okay, that the Pentagon was fine. It made it through the Cold War. So, you know, I'll be okay. And so, again, 24 years ago, and I'm telling this story like it happened yesterday. I said, "Dad, check it out online. You'll see your plane's going into buildings, but don't worry. I'm in the Pentagon. It's a fortress. I made it through the Cold War. I'll be okay." So that was nearly the last time I spoke to him. And so once I hung up with him, I was up on the fifth floor because that's where cell phones could communicate. The walls are so thick in the Pentagon. So at the time, I had to be up on the fifth floor for my phone to work. And so I headed down towards the first floor with a colleague, Bobby Shelby. And Bobby and I were in charge of installing data networking for the Pentagon. And so that's what we were off to do. And so as we're coming down the escalator, I was telling Bobby about New York. And by the time we got to the first escalator, I said, "Bobby, do you mind if we take a smoke break?" He asked me if he could take a smoke break. And I was like, "Yeah, go ahead. We'll be in the command center for a while." And so in between the B and the C ring of the Pentagon, there's an open area. The Pentagon's a huge building. So if you get a chance at some point to Google the Pentagon and see how big, it's 18 miles of corridor. So that means 18 miles of office way that you can walk around, 18 miles of office way. So huge building. And so Bobby and I went in between the B and the C ring. The outermost is the E, then the D, the C, the B, and then the A. Hence five sides. That's where you get the Pentagon from, the name. But there's also five levels of corridor inside the building. So the E is the outermost, the A is the center courtyard area. And so in between the B and the C is an open area where vehicles can make deliveries because it's so big of a building. And so the exhaust could leave. And so people that, enjoyed smoking could smoke there because you're technically outside, even though we're inside the building. So Bobby lit a cigarette. And unbeknownst to me, I had a clipboard in my hand. And that's when I learned later that a clipboard and a cigarette break saved my life. And that's how I start my book. Once I started talking to Bobby about what happened in New York, I flipped open my cell phone browser, the older phones at the time, and started reading about New York. And I just said, geez, Bobby, what's next? The Pentagon. And then 3, 2, 1, boom, the blast went off. And then it picked Bobby and I up and threw us a good distance, knocked us out. And when we came to, that's when I realized we were in trouble. We were in a real bad spot. We pushed off the rubble. I saw Bobby near me. He was covered in blood from the cement that hit him on the glass. I grabbed him and we went towards the center courtyard area. And it was awful. It was awful. I mean, I was a computer guy. I had no experience or no training or no anything with dealing with what just happened. The ground was shaking, the just the building kept debris was falling down on us, and I was in a lot of pain. I was cut from my head to my toes with glass and shards of whatever. But that morning I was carrying a clipboard. For some reason, I usually didn't carry a clipboard, but for some reason I had one that day. I flipped it up and it covered my face. And so that saved my face that day. And so my right hand, I had my cell phone when I was reading on that flip phone. A piece of cement came down and smashed out of my hand. So I lost my means of communication, but I was alive. The first thing I did was I moved my left arm. If you all can just take your left arm and just move it like this, seems pretty basic, right? And then now take a deep breath in and then a breath out. That's a gift. That's a gift. I knew I was alive then. I could move my left arm. I couldn't feel it, but I could move it and I could breathe. So that was my sign I was alive. And so from that point forward, I knew that in my life, I would never take anything for granted. There would be nothing entitled in my life. I would appreciate every moment, every day, every person, every opportunity to be the best version of myself. And I just promised I'd do my very best to be somebody of honor, that if I could survive this, I would be living in gratitude for all I have. And so I never thought 24 years later I'd still be sharing this story and how prevalent it still is today, of how we all need to learn how to live in gratitude and never feel entitled to anything in life, because there's not a September 12th guaranteed for everyone. I learned that the very hard way when I learned later that I lost all my colleagues that were on the other side of the wall from me. So Bobby and I ended up going out to the center courtyard area where people started screaming, "You've been hit, you've been hit." I didn't know what that meant, but I looked down and I saw I was covered in blood. I knew I was in trouble, but I just sat down. And then as people were going by, I started trying to reach out for their cell phone because I wanted to call home and tell them I was okay. But none of the cell phones worked. They were all jammed. So somebody walked by with a two-way radio from one of my work colleagues. And so I could hear people talking on that. So I grabbed that And I could hear them asking, "Is Dan okay? Is Dan all right?" And so I grabbed them, like, "I'm okay. Bobby's okay, but we're both in trouble." And then that set a chain reaction that went back to my office, that went back to everywhere. At that t same time, remember my conversation with my dad? It came for full circle because my sister had called him after the plane had hit, and she said, "Hey, have you heard from Danny?" I tried calling his cell phone and there was no answer. "Is he okay?" And he says, "Yeah, I just talked to him a few minutes ago. Why?" And he said, she said, "He's okay after the Pentagon was hit." And he said, "The what?" And he didn't know. And so my dad started at that point trying to call and figure out what my office numbers were and how he could get a hold of me. And it took him and my family 90 minutes, 90 minutes to learn that, to find out that I was alive. Now, I share that with you because 90 minutes can be really important to all of us. If you have a sheet of paper, I would love for you to be able to write down the words 90 minutes down on that little pad of paper. If you have a sticky note, I'd encourage you to write 90 minutes on that sticky note. And I would encourage you to put it on your clock radio at home, or maybe your bathroom mirror at home. So it's the first thing you see when you wake up, and it's the last thing you see when you go to bed. And it's going to be my gift to you today to remind you to take 90 minutes to think about all the things that you want to do in life, all the ways that you can become the best version of yourself. And remind yourself to always, always make sure you tell the people that you care about how you feel, because there's not a September 12th for everyone. And you can learn from this entire day. There's two ways you can look at this entire day. You can look at it through the lens of entitlement, or you can look at it through the lens of appreciation. You can't look through it for both of them. You can't be entitled to something and feel appreciative at the same time. It's impossible. Trust me, I've thought about it for years. But if you can, just for a moment, just in your mind, think of something that you might feel entitled to today. Think about something that, you just feel you deserve. That you, because you, maybe it's a roof over your head. You're going home and you deserve to have shelter and a roof over your head. You could turn, and this is a life secret. This is one of these life things that, if you get nothing else from this visit today, you take this. Everything that you feel entitled to in life, whether it be a roof over your head, whether it be a three square meals in front of you, whether it be clothing on your back, whatever it is, you can turn it into an appreciation. It's really, really easy to do. However, it's extremely difficult to change your behavior, right? Our attitudes are changeable, but our behaviors, that takes a little bit more courage. Courage is going to happen when you believe in something greater than anything else, and you don't let what life has told you to stop you from doing the right thing. And so if you're able to find the courage to say, "You know what? I know that I'm entitled to a roof over my shoulders, over my head, but I'm going to appreciate it so much that I'm going to volunteer at a soup kitchen for people that don't have a roof over their shoulders. I'm going to care about somebody that I don't know and let them know that they're cared for." You could feel entitled to feeling nice and warm on a cold day when you have this wonderful warm jacket on. You can feel entitled to that, or you can appreciate that and change that entitlement to a gift of an appreciation and do a clothing drive for the less fortunate. You may do this already, and for that's awesome. And I think you'll find that your life will have a legacy that you can be truly proud of. So if there's not a September 12th, how you live today is truly the gift. And so I encourage you to do that. I encourage you to do your 90-minute exercise, to think about 90 minutes, and think about all the things that you want to do in life, plan it out and do it, and make sure you tell the people how you care about, how you feel. But then the next part of that is to change everything you feel entitled to and into appreciation. You do that, and you're gonna have a lifelong change that's going to give you purpose. I sometimes call it the purpose conduit. It's connecting, conduit connects power from one source to another. And if you want to connect your true purpose from where you have the energy to make a difference in this world, you can connect that purpose to those that need it most. And it's amazing the life that you can light up. Sometimes it requires us to learn how to walk in each other's shoes. So now, give me just 2 seconds here. Okay, I'm back. Needed to give you a prop here for a moment. So one of the things that I encourage people to do is to learn how to walk in each other's shoes. Now, think about what that means to you. When's the last time that you walked in somebody else's shoes? And that means to take yourself out of everything that you're thinking about yourself. Not thinking about what you need. When's the last time that you really thought about somebody else and put yourself in their spot to try and take perhaps some of their pain away, maybe some of their sadness? Maybe you had a friend that lost somebody that was close and you sat with them. That's a perfect example of walking in somebody's shoes. And as this day is, as September 11th, as I'm describing it to you, I'm hoping you're walking in my shoes. I hope that you're taking this moment and you're truly thinking about, if this guy went through what he did, I'm wondering if there's some way that I can make this world a little bit better place too. This guy's sharing a story from 24 years ago that still is prevalent, makes sense today. And he's still doing it every single year. Why was he doing that? Might be to inspire me to become a better person. I think that's where it's at. And so I'm going to encourage you to do this thing. It's called Hero, Hero. You've heard of what a hero is. We all have heroes in our lives. Perhaps our teacher, like Mr. Krause, perhaps it's your family members. But HERO stands, I use it as an acronym for HERO, help everyone regardless of outcome. Now, this doesn't require you to jump in an icy lake and rescue somebody, but we sure appreciate those that do that. Talking about being a hero in your own school. You see, I find that the way to make 9/11 from such a horrible event into something that we can learn from is when we take negativity and turn it into a positive. When we take entitlement into an appreciation. So if you can maybe search out for somebody who's sitting alone at the lunch table and sit next to them, that's hero material. That's hero stuff. Help everyone regardless of outcome. Perhaps you have a teacher that you know is having a tough day. Dropping a little thank you note to them, putting a little thank you note on a sticky note so that the teacher sees it when they get there in the morning. Of how much they mean to you. It could be a lot of different things that you can come up with. Kindness. And you should write this down if you can. Kindness is the greatest leadership skill in the world. I believe that with every fiber of my being. Kindness is the greatest leadership skill in the world. And when you show kindness, you can turn any type of day that you have into a positive one. And so, kindness also gives you the tools, the toolkit, if you will, to be a hero when you're reaching out to those that need it most. And so when you're helping everyone, regardless of outcome, you're not thinking about yourself. You're not feeling entitled to anything. You're appreciating that you've got a gift and you can help somebody with it. And so really think about how you can be a hero. And with 9/11 coming up this week, can you promise me you do that at least on 9/11? Doesn't need to be 90 minutes worth of being a hero. It could be 2 minutes. Could be a lunch. It could be a sticky note. But find the hero within you. Coordinate a food drive. Do something that you can create this world to be a better place, because I believe in every fiber of my being. That's how we prevent other 9/11s from happening. That's why I'm here. That's why I'm sharing this story. And so we got to be good to each other. We have got to be good to each other. Bullying is a form of terrorism, right? So how we treat others, whether it be online, on social medias, how we treat others is a direct reflection of who we are. And if we're going to be a hero in others' lives, we've got to look out for those that maybe can't defend themselves. And so we got to be good people like that, and make sure that if we see anybody getting bullied online, that we stop it. And we tell somebody, we tell a teacher, we tell a parent, make sure that we stop that, because we don't want to have that level of terrorism happening in our schools and our homes and in our lives. You can change anything from those negatives into a positive. Kindness will always prevail. So walking in each other's shoes. You guys have been walking with me now for about a half hour now in my shoes. I hope you're not tired yet. But I'm gonna share with you a story of because of 9/11. Now, before I jump into that story, let me just bring you back around to September 11th. So once I got out of the center courtyard area, they brought me out to a triage. And so once I went into the triage, now you may have heard of that term. It's in hospitals, it's a kind of your first stop. So they triage you or identify what health concerns you have. So I went into this triage area, and they gave me a green ribbon, which meant I was going to live, which was great. There was a yellow one, which meant people needed medical help soon, which my colleague Bobby needed. There was a red one, which meant that people needed what's called instant surgery to save their life. And then there was a black ribbon, and that's tragically when people had passed on. All four colored ribbons were surrounding me as I was laying in the grass outside the Pentagon in the triage area. 24 years, and it still seems like yesterday. The smells, the cries, the voices of concern. The people yelling, "Where do I donate blood?" There's hope. There's hope in really tough days. Sometimes you have to look hard for it, but there's always hope there, because the kindness comes out. And as we were laying in the triage, Bobby Shelby, the guy that was with me that day, next to me, we had gotten separated, but we got reconnected. We were told by a doctor that was helping us that we needed to get running because there's a second plane incoming. That was the one that crashed in Pennsylvania, but they didn't know it as of yet. And so Bobby and I reconnected. We went underneath the nearby bridge, and there's this woman named Erin Anderson. Erin was sitting at home. There's an Erin Anderson in each one of you, of varying degrees, but Erin was at home, and she said, "I feel like I have to help somebody. I got to do something." And so she drove down to the Pentagon because she saw on TV all the smoke and such. And she saw Bobby and I on the side of the road. The doctor had left us there to go help more people. And she said, "Get in, I'll take you to the hospital." I'm like, "Wow, this is amazing." So we got her in her car, and she drove us right to the hospital there. And it was amazing. Bobby had to get transferred to a different hospital to get some more medical treatment. He's okay physically now. But at the time, he needed more attention than I did. But I was at the Fort Myers clinic there, and so they triaged me again and gave me medicines and helped me feel good medically. And then Erin Anderson asked if she could stay with me. She said her husband just got deployed for a year because of what just happened on 9/11. Would I mind if she stayed with me? I'm like, would you mind staying with me? I don't have anyone else with me. My family is up in Connecticut. And so, yeah, hero, my guardian angel. So Erin Anderson stayed with me that day, and that's when I ended up calling home for the first time 90 minutes later and letting him know I was alive. You remember that 90 minutes again? Thinking about all the things my family was thinking about, all the things that if they could just tell Dan one more time, if they could just go on that vacation they always talked about, if they could just tell me that they loved me one more time, all those things for 90 minutes. 184 people next to me didn't have that chance. And from the Pentagon. So that was the tragedy of that day of learning that. But at the time, everything was still so new. I was in shock and trying to figure out what this all meant. The Aaron Andersons of the world, there's one in each one of you, where you know that sometimes you have to lower that wall that we put up around us that says, it's not my job. It's not my problem. Somebody else can handle it. Any of those statements are based in what? Entitlement, right? Instead, Aaron Anderson and all of you could believe in appreciation for all you have, in appreciating the fact that you may not be able to do much, but everyone can do something, right? And so she drove us to the hospital. But she became a lifelong friend because of it. So you never know the impact you can have on somebody by just giving of yourself to those that need it most. That's how we prevent future 9/11s from happening. That's why I'm here today again with you folks. So walking in each other's shoes, it's been a pretty in-depth and pretty powerful walk this for today for you guys. I hope it means as much to you as it does to me to share this story again. I'm going to show you my shoes. These are pretty cool looking shoes, aren't they? Colorful red, white, and blue flip-flops are pretty neat. So the story behind these shoes, the 10th anniversary of September 11th, I went down to the Pentagon. I brought my fiance, now my wife, down so she could see what I went through and understand what I was going to live with. And so after that, I flew back home. I did a talk in my hometown in Connecticut. The next day, I flew out to Wisconsin to the University of Wisconsin in Plattsville. It's southwest corner of Wisconsin. It's middle of nowhere, I'm pretty sure of it. So I ended up doing it my talk, my visit with just similar to what I'm visiting with you guys. And so I did my talk and I opened it up for questions. And so amazing that I was able to open up for the questions and hear the interesting ones, a lot of different theories and what have you of what actually happened that I was able to provide clarity to. But the last person that was in the room, and the last person asked a question, stood up and said, "Mr. Holdridge, your speech changed my life." And I'm like, "Wow, that's incredible. That's thank you." I just want, I mean, we're in front of 500, 600 people, and it's why I do what I do. And so she said, "Mr. Holdridge, I'm going to give you my shoes." Said, "You're going to give me your shoes. What could that possibly be?" And so, I mean, I'm in front of a huge audience. I didn't want to embarrass her. I didn't quite know what to say. I mean, it's like, well, I don't wear women's shoes, but thank you. And so she said, "No, you don't understand." And she started to cry. She had her husband stand up next to her. She said, "Mr. Holdridge, I lost my two sons. One was a 10-year-old, and he passed away due to a medical condition they found too late, till it was too late. His older brother was just a couple of years older than him and said that his older brother thought the only way he could be was with his younger brother again, as if he took his own life. So he committed suicide." He says, "After hearing what you've gone through and the loss you've endured and how you're trying to turn this into a positive, how you were appreciating everything and every moment, you're the first person I've felt that truly understands what it was like to walk in my shoes. These are her shoes. Now, I literally just got them from my bag, because they come with me every single day of my life. They're with me all the time. It's my reminder of my responsibility to create better tomorrows, because my second shot at life on September 11th, every day's a gift. Every person's a gift. But when you learn to walk in somebody else's shoes, when you reach out to somebody that needs you, you grow as a person. You grow as a legacy. You grow kindness. There's so much goodness to it. God blesses us with a lot of gifts that we may not realize, but we sure realize it after you help somebody, when you feel so good afterwards, like you know you just made somebody's life better. Today, I hope you feel that. I hope in some way that you feel that you feel that you can change somebody else's life for the better, being the hero to gaining to interject or injecting kindness in all you do, and the people, whether you sit at some with somebody at lunch, whether you loan somebody a jacket when it's cold out, whether you organize a food drive, whether you just be kind to each other. That's how we prevent 9/11s from happening. We have a lot of different ways in life that there are things that we can't control, but the number one thing we can control is kindness to each other. That's from within. If you can never feel entitled to anything in life from this point forward and appreciate everything and everyone, I can guarantee you your life will have meaning beyond anything you could have ever imagined. And so I encourage you to be good to each other. Be kind to each other. I speak and I always mention Josh Piver. Josh Piver was a 23-year-old young man who was from my hometown in Connecticut, and he perished in 9/11 in New York. He was in his dream job. And I asked his mom, "What message would you like me to carry now for 24 years?" And she said that Josh would want people to be good to each other. So I'm going to encourage you to do that. Be good to each other. Do your homework 90 minutes. And if you want some bonus extra points for your homework on doing your 90 minutes, make sure you tell your parents or your guardians or those that you live with that you love them. And do that on behalf of my mom. She's going to make sure that, she'll make sure you do that homework assignment if she could. That's important stuff. There's not always a September 12th. So let's be our best version of ourselves today. Every day is a gift. It just depends if we're going to open the present and make it happen. The present doesn't happen inside our phones and our phones in front of us. It happens when your heart is opened to others. And that's it, Ralph. I don't know if you have any questions or.
Yeah, we got a few questions, and I know we have Miss Wilkerson's class here. If you guys have questions, just message in the chat. But I read your book. I love your book, Surviving
Thank
September
you.
11th, and it's not just about like the events of September 11th, but it's more about the appreciation of that. And I
Very
wanted to
nice.
see if you could touch on your topic on there, the weapons of mass appreciation. I thought that was like a really cool like play on words, but it just if you could touch on that a little bit. I know your discussion was about that, but kind of explain a bit what that's about.
Sure. So we had all heard in news and such about weapons of mass destruction, right? Do you remember that in the news? And there was a lot of talk of that, especially with the wars in Iraq and the like. And I had thought, imagine if we didn't think about the destruction, but we thought about how we could heal, how we could bring people together, how we can solve our world's differences by appreciating the differences that we have in each other instead of thinking about differences to divide each other. It's amazing when you realize that the things that differ from one another, they can be celebrated. That's a gift. That's a gift. If you can look at it that way, that just because somebody may not look like us, maybe have a different background, a different religion, a different socioeconomic status, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. Your value as a human being doesn't change no matter what's around you. And no one can change the value of who you are except you, right? So no matter what anyone else tells you, no matter what anyone else says, your true value comes from within. And when you appreciate all you have, that spreads. Now, when you feel entitled and you feel negative, that spreads also. But imagine for a moment if we could do a mass appreciation where everyone just appreciated each other, no matter how different we were, no matter what challenges each other's faced, we knew that we valued everybody equally and that we would care for each other no matter how differently we may be. Imagine how different the world would be. So when that woman who gave me her shoe, she appreciated what I was the story I was saying. And my message from there is imagine what we could do when we learn to walk in each other's shoes. We appreciate or amass appreciation, and we use that as a weapon against evil. We appreciate what's the goodness in each other. And then when we really ignore people's skin colors, people's background, people, and just appreciate who the human being is, and even appreciate what the human doing is, that's when we change the world. And if you're going to be a world changer, it starts with that.
So we have a question from Miss Wilkerson's class. You guys can unmute, and thank you, Dan, for emphasizing about the world changer topic. And you guys check out his book. It's at danholdridge.com, and you can also get it through Amazon. Very great read. One of the students wanted to know what happened with Bobby after he got his ribbon.
So Bobby, he and I went to the hospital with Erin Anderson, and she drove us there. And then Bobby got transferred to Arlington Hospital because he had a shard of glass in his head that got removed. And so he was okay physically. But he got transferred. So before he left, he gave me his family's phone number and asked me to call his family to let him know that he was alive. So I was the conduit for that, and connected with him. So we had a moment where his wife was crying and thank you, that sort of thing. So Bobby and I became close after that. He had hugged me on 9/11, said, "I guess we're bonded for life," and I guess we are. And so he now has several kids. I have one son. So we grew our families, and we always stay close to our friendship. And this Thursday we'll reconnect again on September 11th. We always speak every 9/11, and just share in our life from the prior year. But also, I'm a big Red Sox fan, so he likes the Orioles, so we'll have the other fun conversation as well.
You certainly are a
Wonderful.
Boston Celtics and Red Sox and Patriots fan. Yeah, so we'll go with a couple more questions and we'll let you go. So one of the questions that I had from earlier and also from reading your book, you said that life struggles give us lessons to carry when we need them most. What has the struggle going through this taught you about turning a negative into a positive or a test into a testimony?
So it's been said to make your message. And I think this whole not from the 9/11 experience itself, it puts things in perspective in ways that I think it just takes people back so much to reflect on how much of a gift they have that they never realized. Because when you're faced with something in a real life example in life now, so maybe you have a very stressful day at work, and I do a lot of large project work and such. And there can be a really bad day, and they're like, "Dan, why don't you get upset?" Why don't you get anxious? And I can say to them that this is nothing. This is absolutely nothing. No matter what goes on today, no matter how bad things get, I survived a plane hitting me and recovered from that. There's nothing in anything in life that can ever jar me more than that. And so that perspective, when I share it with other people, they're able to do us an introspection and say, wow, I guess things aren't that bad. We can figure this out. We can get through this. And so I would encourage all your viewers to really think about that whole mindset that, you know what, no matter how bad things may seem, it's if you feel entitled to an outcome that's not happening, perhaps it's because you're not appreciating what's available to you. So if you're in a tough spot and you're not quite sure which way to go, think about five things you can appreciate. Just five things that you can appreciate, and it will lend itself. It'll plant the seed of solutions by interjecting with an appreciation mindset that will change any challenge that you have into an opportunity. You're going from an entitlement of a challenge to an opportunity of appreciation.
All about the daily appreciation, appreciating the little things. And I wanted to one of the kids wanted to know this, and I think this kind of touches on that. What was going on in your thoughts, in your head, when the plane hit the Pentagon?
So it was so fast. It was so fast. There wasn't time to think, really. I mean, I was just reading about New York on my cell phone. So I looked up the bombing and said, geez, Bobby, what's next? The Pentagon? And then 3, 2, 1, boom, the blast went off and picked us up and threw us and knocked us out. So when I came to, it was just survival mode. How do I get out? That's the only thing I was thinking about. Now, when it first happened, I recall it being sounding like a freight train coming through. If does that make sense? The noise around, the ground was shaking, all those things were going on. But it was so fast. It was so fast. And so there wasn't a lot to think, but once that happened, my only thought was, how do I get out? And so now, still 24 years later, I can tell you every exit of every building I go into, how quick I can get out. And I just do that unconsciously. So my body is still in that mindset of flight, of safety, find the safety. No matter where I go and no matter what place I go into, I know where all the exits are and how to get out quickly.
That's amazing, because we've had obviously other September 11th survivors, and they all say that, all of them, they know where the exits are wherever they go. And so we'll go with the final question. What would you say is the biggest takeaway from September 11th from you personally? I know you touched on this, and then what lasting advice could you give for these kids as they go off into adulthood and kind of go off into the world?
So I think the biggest lesson you can learn from 9/11 is that you need to control what you can, and everything else you can't control, don't waste your time on. That life is precious, that there's no guarantee of a tomorrow. So that everything you can do today to be the best version of yourself, do it today. Don't wait. Don't wait for anything. Wait, go after your dreams. Go after your everything that you want to be in life. Go after. Don't wait. Don't wait for anything. And when people tell you you can't, keep going. Keep going. Don't stop. Your dreams are at risk if you let other people tell you you can't do what you believe in your heart to do. So, and if you need to find that purpose, if you're trying to search for why am I here and what's the most important, start by volunteering. Helping people in need. Because once you do that, you're going to find that you have a true purpose in life. And it is. And then what you find your passion in life is, you'll find the greatest happiness when you know that you're making somebody else's life better. And if we can prevent other 9/11s from happening by being good to each other, by sharing kindness and being passionate about what we do in a way that can help others, That's the way we can prevent 9/11s from happening again. So my advice is to you is go at life with everything you've got, and don't stop. Just go after life. Life goes by super fast. 24 years later, I'm still can't believe it's 24 years later. But all the things that I had wanted to do in life prior to 9/11, I've done them now, and I tell you, now I live with no regrets. So live with no regrets. Go after everything that you can, what you dream about, and make sure that you don't let the 9/11s, because we all will have 9/11s in our life of varying degrees, moments that will stop us and force us to think about what's most important and why am I here. Don't let those moments of 9/11s, of those very difficult days, define who you are. Become greatness that you're destined for in spite of what's happened. Use it as a standing block to stand on, to say that you've become stronger because of it. And don't let a negative event in your life change your course of where you want to be, right? So make sure your legacy is that of your passion, and make sure that you have kindness filled throughout. Don't forget also to do your 90 minutes homework assignment. And if Ralph's able to share my contact information there, let me know how it goes. I'd love to learn and hear about how your 90-minute assignments go. And if you can write to your teacher in some extra credit assignment or something about what it was like to tell your family that you cared about them when you may not have done that either ever before or in a long time, what was their response? I can tell you it's going to be life-changing for the better. So never forget that. And I can tell you with my son, every time I see him now, I'll never forget to tell him that I love him. Again, there's no guarantee of a September 12th, but he understands that. And so he lives his life with that same appreciation. I hope you do too.
Absolutely. Can't thank you again, Dan. And guys, to learn more, go to danholdridge.com. Definitely check out his book. And we can't thank you enough for educating this year's students about the events of that day.
You're welcome. You're
Thank you
welcome.
so much, man. I appreciate you.
John, I appreciate you all. Have a great school year. Do your best. Be your best. Thank you.
Thank you.